parsha is Parshas Korach. Korach is a painful parsha. Machlokes, the source of all evil. Machlokes, ugly, ugly machlokes. Vayikach Korach ben Yitzhar ben Kos ben Levi v'Dosan v'Aviram ben Eliav. He took with him different groups of people. Dosan v'Aviram, they were always available. They were like the Hatzala of machlokes. They had their telephone number on every refrigerator. Whenever you want to make trouble, give us a call. A gemach for machlekes. Okay, we're going to come. We'll talk about that in a few moments. Dos and Vaviron, they were the gemach for machlekes. 250 people, most of them were from Shevet Ruvain, the Bechor. They were firstborns. They were from the firstborn. They had a grievance because the Avodah was meant, ideally, lechatchila, to be done by the firstborns, by the Bechor. Ruvain, Bechoriata, Koichi, V'yeser Oini, Koichi, V'reishis Oini, Yeser Se'es. He was meant to be the one that would do the Avodah, but he lost it. Yeah.
When we say Bechor, don't we mean the Bechor of every family?
Yes, the Bechor of every family. But Ruvain, the people, the 250 people, were, it says, from most of them were from Shevet Ruvain, and they were the firstborns of their respective families. So it was like a double, the whole Shevet and Ruvain has it in their blood, a complaint, because Ruvain was rejected. And then the firstborns in Ruvain, they have a double negative because they also, every firstborn was rejected, but Ruvain, who was the firstborn of Yaakov, and the firstborns of Ruvain, they felt really bitter because they were the ones that really should have done the Avodah and it was taken away from them. So they were very easy. They were very easy to join in the rebellion against Moshe Rabbeinu and change the order of who does the Avodah. Why only Aaron? And who else? Oin ben Peles. Oin ben Peles, he gets special mention. He had nothing to gain. Oin ben Peles was not a Koyein. He was not a Levi. He wasn't a Bechor. He had nothing to gain from this, and we'll discuss him in a few moments. Okay, question. Ugly, ugly machlekes. What was going through the mind of Korach to instigate this ugly machlekes, which led to the death of the 250 distinguished members? It says the Chazal, they were members of Sanhedrin. And then subsequently there was a Magefa after this rebellion ended because of the damage, what it did to Klal Yisrael. There was a Magefa. I think Chazal said there were 24,000 people. 14,000, sorry. I'm thinking about Milchemes Midian. Right. 14 plus thousand people died in this horrible Magefa. What was going through the mind of Korach? Rashi answers the question. Rashi says, the Korach shepikeachoya. He was a brilliant man. He must have had multiple doctorates. Pikeachoya. Mo ro'o lishtus zeh. What did he see this to do this foolish attempt to undermine the authority of Moshe Rabbeinu? Shtus, Rashi does not mince words. Moral l'shtus zeh. So Rashi answers, Einoi hit osa. His eye caused him to go astray. Ra'a shalsheles gidula yoitza mimenu. He saw lineage. He saw aluach ha'pelpiruach ha'kodesh, a holy person. A Piruach HaKodesh, he saw his descendants, his future descendants. Shmuel, he saw Shmuel HaNavi. Shmuel was the greatest of the great. Shmuel was the one that anointed Shaul HaMelech. He anointed David HaMelech. Shmuel Sheshakul Kineged, he was equal Kineged both Moshe V'Aaron, as the Pasuk says. Pasuk equates Shmuel to both. Both of them together. Omar, so he said, Bishviloy ani nimlat. He says, because of them, I will escape unharmed. If such greatness will come from me, Shmuel is my enikol. Don't you think the Zayde deserves some kavod? Don't you think Shmuel should be able to say that his Zayde was the Gadol Hadar? I want to do it for my Enoch. I don't want my Enoch to say that the Zayde, you know, what did he do? He worked on a farm. Okay? I don't want my Enoch Shmuel to say, what did you, sitting in Cheder, all the Kindleach together, what did you, my Zayde is this Rebbe, and my Zayde is this Rebbe, and my Zayde is that Rebbe. What is your Zayde? You know, he sweeps the streets. Okay? Whatever, I want to give my Enoch for the Kindleach. They should have some Yichus. I should also be a great person. Bishviloyani Nimlot. And then it goes on, Rashi goes on, also the 24 Mishmoris of Levim who sang Shira Ruach HaKodesh. Okay. What is the Haftarah? Okay, beautiful. We go to the whole parasha. So therefore, in other words, Rashi is coming to legitimize to a degree that, you know, you have to understand Korach is not a simple person. Korach was a very holy person, very, very great. They say that most of Klal Yisrael, there are various midrashim, that the vast majority of Klal Yisrael were on his side. Okay, they didn't actually sign up. Literally, they weren't from the 250 people who brought the Ketores, but they had the sympathy of the vast majority of Klal Yisrael. He was very charismatic.
Silent majority,
they were all basically in their minds rooting him on, hoping he would win because they liked him. He was a personality, he was very charismatic, he was very successful, and you know the most important thing about him?
Rich.
Money isn't everything.
No, health is 5%.
It's the only thing.
No, money isn't everything, but health is 5%.
Okay? It certainly did not spoil his popularity, the fact that he was the richest man in the world. Okay? So Korach, people, they like, it speaks, money speaks. So it had a lot going for him, and the people were very enamored by Korach. So Mar Berurah Shtus, Mar Mishal Shoy, what did he do? No, he had a very good cheshbon. He saw Shmuel Hanavi. Shmuel Shal Kenegin Moshe Aviyar, and it can't be that if my anicle is going to be Shmuel Hanavi, it cannot be that I'm wrong in what I want to do. Okay, very nice. Okay, so there is a logic. We've legitimized, we've given validity. Rashi has come to give justification for the behavior of Korach. He was wrong. At the end of the day, he was severely punished. He was swallowed up by the earth. In Bria Yivra Hashem. Okay? It doesn't say that the whole question, what's going to be with him, Lasa Lavai? What's going to be, does he have a Chelag Zalim Abba? He was severely punished. There's no question about it. But Rashi is coming to give him some validity, some justification in why he had this calculation, why he went forward and did this shtus. Okay, very good. Now, after we read the parasha, we read the Haftarah. And the Haftarah, we learn about another person who was a leader in Klal Yisrael, who was challenged by his people. What's the story? The story is the story of Shmuel. It's about Shmuel. Shmuel, let's learn the story. Shmuel was a shofet. He was a judge. He was the last shofet. He was a circuit judge. He would travel all around. He would travel all around the entire Klal Yisrael. When he would come, he would give him a Kabbalah's punin, and he would sit down, and anyone that had a question would come and ask him the question, and he would answer. And then one day, the people come to Shmuel, who was recognized as being the Gadol Hadar, the Shoifet of Klal Yisrael, and they say to him, Shmuel, we don't want you to serve us anymore. Soim tosim alecha melech. We want a king. Shmuel was so hurt. The psukim there described, Shmuel was in mourning. He was so hurt after everything that he did for Klal Yisrael. How could they betray him and say to him in his lifetime, we don't want you. You're not acceptable. You're not acceptable to us. We don't want you, and we want a replacement. We want a king. Soim tosim Alecha Melech. And he says to Hashem his complaint, and Hashem says, Shmuel, it's not about you. They're rebelling against me, v'chulu, v'chulu. And finally, Shmuel gives in. He anoints Shaul. And then he gathers the entire Klal Yisrael to basically wish them farewell. To wish them to say goodbye to Klal Yisrael. his departure, to say, I'm handing off the power to the new Melech Shaul. And the psukim are very sad. They're very, very sad, and they're very, very similar to Moshe Rabbeinu. Vayomer Shmuel oklis lahav Torah tomorrow. Vayomer Shmuel kol Yisrael hinei shamati b'kolchem l'chol asher amartem li. V'amlich aleichem melech. V'ata hinei amelech. He goes on to say what the melech is going to. Then he goes on to say, hinei anuvi. Before I say goodbye, does anyone here, he rubs it into them. Does anyone here have a complaint? Someone get up and testify neged Hashem v'neged mishichoy imshor mi lo kachti v'chamar mi lo kachti. Did I take one of your donkeys? Exactly what Moshe Rabbeinu said to Klal Yisrael. V'esmi oshakti, did I rob from anyone? Esmi ratzoisi, did I harm anyone? U'miyad mi lo kachti choyfer v'alim enai boy v'yoshiv lochem. Have any complaints? He's rubbing it into them. What was wrong with me that in my lifetime you had to reject me and demand a king? You could have waited until I died. And then it comes a time for a king. What kind of chutzpah is this that you rejected me? No, you rejected me. Here's your king. Goodbye and good luck. In other words, Shmuel was no better than Moshe. Moshe, in this week's parasha, was challenged. The whole Klal Yisrael said to Moshe, you know, we want a replacement. There are better people out there. It's time for you to retire. It's time for there to be a change in order. Korach is charismatic. He's young. He's fresh. He represents the new generation. Kol ha'am kulam kidoish v'seicham Hashem. U'madu atis nasu b'kahal Hashem. Basically, the whole Klal Yisrael allowed this to happen. Shmuel, it's exactly the same, if not a lot worse. You know why it's not worse? Because Shmuel, they actually succeeded in getting rid of. Think about it. Moshe, when the parasha is over, remains standing. He remains standing, and all of the detractors are swallowed up into the ground. And there's a magefa, in order to teach people, don't you dare mess with Moshe Rabbeinu. When the day is over, Moshe remains standing. When the Haftorah is over, Shmuel is gone. He's gone. Not that long after, immediately, because Shaul only lasted for 2 years, and Shmuel died before Shaul. So he died right at this time. And he was not meant to die, 52 years old. He could have lived a lot longer. He was only 52 years old when he died. Shmuel, when the Haftorah is over, Shmuel, who was one of the most successful, greatest leaders in the entire Klal Yisrael, is removed from office for no reason whatsoever. He was impeached. And what was his crime? Nothing. Nothing. They impeached him. We don't want you. We want someone young, fresh, charismatic, all of these things that we hear about today. New generation. We want a king, a melech. Different times have changed. And Shmuel was the shofet who was shokol kineged Moshe v'Aaron, was removed from office, disappears into the sunset. He dies, and we have a new king, Shaul HaMelech. So Rabbi, so let me ask you, who is more successful? Moshe or Shmuel? Who's a more successful leader? Moshe. Moshe remains standing when the parasha is over. Shmuel doesn't. Shmuel's gone. He loses. Korach says, Moshe has to go. Moshe has to be impeached. Has to be removed from office. Wait, hold on, let me say my piece. Moshe has to be removed. You know why? And I'm right. Because look at my enikol, Shmuel. Look how great he is. He shakol kineged Moshe v'Aaron. Excuse me, Korach. Shmuel was a failure. I mean, he was extremely great. Shakol kineged Moshe v'Aaron. He was the greatest Navi. He was the one that was Moshe, Shaul, and David. But as far as leadership is concerned, they threw him out. They mamish. Let's not make believe. Let's not rewrite history here. They mamish threw him out. They came to him and they said, we don't want you anymore. It's time for you to leave. And it's time for a melech and leave. Leave your position of authority. So what are you thinking, Korach? You're thinking that Moshe has to leave and I'm going to replace Moshe because I represent Shmuel. But Shmuel's leadership doesn't come anywhere near Moshe because Moshe is successful. He remained standing to the last day and your uncle Shmuel didn't last. He was thrown out of office. So obviously, Korach, with all of his pikchus and his Ruach HaKodesh, who saw into the future and saw the holiness of Shmuel, didn't see this. So in other words, he wasn't really as smart as he thought he was. Korach, pikeachoya, maro lishtus zoseh. He saw Shmuel is shakul kineged Moshe v'Aaron. That's right. But there's more to life than being shakul kineged Moshe v'Aaron. There are certain leadership qualities that you need to be successful. Shmuel, the pasuk says, his holiness, his greatness in every dimension was shakul kineged Moshe v'Aaron. But you cannot deny the fact that as serving as a leader, he failed because the people threw him out of office. You look very puzzled, Mr. Rappaport. You cannot deny the fact that he was thrown out of office. So who was more cut out for the role of leadership? Moshe or Shmuel? Moshe. Moshe succeeded to the very last day. Shmuel didn't. He was out. We don't find them mourning over him. We don't find anything about him. That's right. But he's no longer the leader. He's not the shofet. Shmuel was the undisputed leader. He wasn't just a Navi. He was the shofet. Yes.
No. People got tired of school. He got older. His sons did not want to do.
He was says Kavsol of Zikna. He was 52 years old.
I know, but he didn't travel.
His sons did not go with the drachav in his ways. Chazal say they sat home. The people should come to them instead of them going around. That's part of his failure. Why didn't he inspire his children to go in his ways? What? So
that,
you can't.
That seems to be where the Navi do stand by the.
Being a leader, Moshe Rabbeinu's sons also, Gershon and Elazar, were not rejected from leadership roles. But yet, Moshe still remained as the leader. There are elements in leadership that are not defined. There is greatness in being, there are elements of greatness in being Moshe of Yaron, Shmuel Lishakul Kineged, Ishakul Kineged Moshe V'Aaron, but there are certain leadership characteristics and qualities which are critical to lead Klal Yisrael. Hashem selected Moshe Rabbeinu to be the Manik Hador. Korach said, Moshe, it's time for you to retire. I'm going to replace you. I'm better than you. How do I know I'll be a better leader than you? Because my Enikul Shmuel, he is shakul kineged, you and Aaron put together. That goes to show that I'm going to be a better leader. But you're not better than Shmuel, your Enikul. And your Enikul Shmuel was thrown out of office. He was not an effective leader. He was dismissed and replaced by a melech. So what does that go to show? It goes to show that Korach wasn't such a pikeach after all. He was a pikeach in thinking he looked, I see this Shmuel. But the shtus in his pikchus was, you didn't look enough. If you would have analyzed your anical Shmuel, it's true. You're only the one side of the coin.
Exactly.
You looked at your anical Shmuel. He was the Manik Hadar, he was the Navi, there was no one greater than Shmuel. But as far as leadership goes, There are other ingredients that are necessary. And the fact that he did not succeed in exactly the same type of situation that Moshe succeeded goes to show that you're wrong, Korach. You're not so smart. Your legitimacy, you're flawed. You were a pikeach, but it was a shtus. There was a shtus in your pikchus. That is why this haftorah is so critical. And what is that? So what is the now? What does it come out l'mafreya? Now when we read the haftorah, Hover hadova l'mafreya, that Korach was dead wrong. He was dead wrong. It was just nothing more than a machloikis for no good reason. When you learn the parsha, sometimes it's worthy to make machloikis. There's no question about it. There are got to be times called machloikis Hashem Shemayim soifa lehiskayim. There is times in life, Rabbi Yisrael, when it's kedai, it's worthy to make machloikis. But you have to have a very good reason. Korach was a pikeach. I have a very good reason. After you finish the haftorah, what do you discover? The reason is flawed from beginning to end. So now when we go back and read the parasha a second time, there was absolutely no reason to make the machloikis. It was just a machloikis for kavod, sheloi l'shem shamayim. The haftorah is critical to understand the parasha. Because if you just read the parasha and you don't read the haftorah, you can walk away and say, no, there was a machloikis. There was a good reason to make machloikis. Happens to be the best man won. Okay, there was a duel, and the best man won, Moshe won, but it was a good fight. You always hear, it was a good fight. Machloikis abayin rava. A machloikis beshamai beshillel. So machloikis l'shem shemayim was kedai to fight, to come away with Yisoidos, Milchamta Shel Torah. Milchamta Shel Torah. When you learn the Haftorah, the message is, this was not a Machlokes, Beshama, Beis Hillel, Abayin Rava, Ravina Ravashi. This was Shtus. The whole Machlokes was built on a foundation of nonsense. The only reason, because of Shmuel, you're not better than Shmuel. You can't be better than your whole foundation, because I'm like Shmuel. You see, Shmuel couldn't do it. He couldn't do what Moshe can do. You have no business in this position of authority. Okay, let's now go to Noshim, the women, yeah.
Maybe just the opposite. He wanted to do what Shmuel wasn't able to do. I mean, I'm sure that...
He's building his Yisoid. Other way, building his... look, the grandson draws from the grandfather. The grandson... No, usually it's the grandchildren are going to do what the grandparents could not do. It's usually the other way around. He's building his foundation upon Shmuel. He doesn't know what he can do. He's looking into the future about Shmuel. But Shmuel couldn't do it. Yisoid is Shmuel. Shmuel, in exactly the same situation, failed. So why do you think you're going to succeed? Adarabba, Shmuel's only coming mitzad you. He's a reincarnation of you. You're the same. You and Shmuel are the same. And he couldn't, so therefore you're not going to succeed. Exactly. He didn't want to. No, the point is, if he saw already Shmuel, he could have seen that. Nogea b'dava. The kavod, the taiva, that's what blinded him in not seeing it the way he should have seen. Okay, let's go further. No, we have to... Yeah,
I'm sorry. Not me.
Let's go further. Let's now go to Oin ben Peles. Oin ben Peles was one of the principles of the Machlokes. Oin ben Peles only mentioned in the beginning of the parasha, and he's no longer mentioned. So Chazal say, what happened to him? Where did he go? It doesn't say that the earth swallowed him up. What happened to him? So Chazal say he had a conversation with his wife. And his wife said to him, Oin, what are you doing? You're participating in the machlokes? For what? What do you have to gain? Korach, if he wins, he's going to be the pneumatic. If the Dosan Vavi, I forgot the whole conversation, but the Kohanim, the 250 men, they're going to become the new Kohanim. But you're not a Bechor. You're not. I don't remember all of the details. I apologize. I didn't look up all the details. But she's basically said to him, you have nothing to gain from the outcome of this machlekes. So Owen was a very good man. He said to his wife, you're right. Whatever your wife says, you're right. He remembered what he learned in marriage counseling school before he got married. Whatever the wife says is right. But he says to his wife, there's a problem. There's a problem. The problem is they're coming for me. They're going to bang down the door and they're going to drag me to participate. So the wife says, I'll take care of it. You go to sleep. He goes to sleep, and then the whole chevra comes to get him. They bang on the door, and what does she do? She takes off her head cover. She takes off her shetel, and she opens the door, and they see a woman without her hair cover. It says in the Medrash. They were horrified. They all run away. Whew! They run away. Okay, clever woman, this is what she did. She took off her hat, her tichel, her snood, whatever they wear, and this woman, her hair is not covered, to make a machloikis, to destroy Klal Yisrael, that they are willing to do. But to go see a woman that doesn't have her hair covered, oh, it's tzadikim l'shem shemayim. Okay, fine, okay. Okay, let's fast forward. It's an incredible thing I saw yesterday. It says in the Pasuk, they come, they accuse Moshe Rabbeinu. It's a very important Pasuk. It's not in Rashi, but it's a famous Gemara. It's a famous Gemara. The Gemara is quoted very, very often in many different places, different contexts, where they come to Moshe and they issue this bitter, bitter, ugly complaint. Vayikahalu al Moshe v'yal arad v'yomu elayhem rav lochem. Ki chol veidah kulom kidosh v'vseichem Hashem. Umadua tisnasu al kahal Hashem. Vayishma Moshe, vayipol al panav. He falls tachnam. He falls on his face. Oh no! What am I going to do now? This has gotten really, really out of hand. Rashi here doesn't tell us all the details, but in the Gemara it says they said more than what it says in the pasuk. They said to Moshe, you had an affair with an Eshes Ish. They accused Moshe Rabbeinu of being bar on an Eshes Ish. And every single man, it says, in Klal Yisrael, said to their wife, I'm giving you a hasra kilu, a soita. Don't you dare ever be with Moshe Rabbeinu. He'll rape you. That's what he said. That's what every single man said to their wife. Moshe Rabbeinu is a noyef. When Moshe Rabbeinu heard this accusation they're saying about him, that he is mizane with noshim, who are married women, vayipol, vayishma Moshe, I'm finished. I'll never get out of this. This type of accusation, even if it's 100% false, when they accuse people like this, and that's what they say about me in the street, in the newspapers, in the media, vayishma Moshe, vayipol al ponov. He falls on his face. The Gemara. Okay, this is the Gemara Mifureshas. This is what they said about Moshe. They called Echad Mishol Kine Es Ishtoi Bifnei Moshe. They accused Moshe of living with an Eshes Ish. Question. How in the world did it come to Moshe Rabbeinu such an accusation? Moshe was Poiresh from his last week's parasha. From his wife, from Tzipora, the Isha Kushis Asher Lokach, he was Poiresh. Moshe had absolutely nothing to do with women. He divorced his wife because he had to be on guard, on standby in case the Ribbono Shel Olam would call for him. Moshe had absolutely nothing to do with women. He was always in public, always in a place. How could they make such an absurd, such a horrible accusation that is patently false against Moshe Rabbeinu? So I saw yesterday in the Sefer, the name of the Sefer we use many times, it's called the Taher Libeinu. The author of the Sefer is anonymous, even though I found his name indirectly in the Hakdama. It says who his name is, but for some reason he wants to be anonymous. I don't remember his name, but the name of this is called V'taher Libenu. It's two volumes. We've used it many, many times. And he says they are an incredible answer. The people of Korach were partially defeated before this whole thing got out of hand. Because their main supporter, Oyn ben Peles, didn't show up. One of their strongest leaders was not present by the rally. They come to the rally to challenge Moshe Rabbeinu, the Korach, Dasan Vaviram, 250 people. They're at this major rally, and they're saying, Moshe, umadua tisnasu al kahal Hashem. Moshe, what are you doing, Moshe? Everyone is looking at the rally. Who's who in Klal Yisrael? Who's there? Signed. Who are the signatures? The signatures. Who's the one that signed off that Moshe Rabbeinu should be removed from office? Korach, Dasan Vaviram, 250 people, but there's one person who's missing. Oyn ben Peles. Where is Oyn ben Peles? How come he withdrew his signature? Why is he not by the rally challenging Moshe Rabbeinu? People began to, you know, maybe Moshe is right. This change of heart. Maybe Korach is wrong. If Oyn ben Peles, highly respected intellectual representative, changed his mind. You know, maybe we should second think this. We should, you know, think about this a little bit more. So what do they say? They say Moshe Rabbeinu went blackmailed. How did he blackmail him? Basically, okay, we have to walk around it, is they said they Moshe Rabbeinu basically lived with his wife. Or, I don't know the exact words, I don't know exactly how to express this, but basically what they said was, let's understand this. Why didn't Oyn ben Peles come to the rally? Because his wife was not wearing a shetel. When a woman does not cover her hair, this is a matter of tznius. It's a matter of the sanctity of Klal Yisrael, of marriage. And this event, hear the point, this event of a breach in the sanctity of man and woman, of husband and wife, was instrumental in giving Moshe Rabbeinu support. It's because this woman did something so unconventional. She was able to hold her husband back from going to the rally by doing what? Doing an Aveira, I don't know if you want to call it an Aveira, but by breaching what was accepted in the holiness of a marriage. That's what she did. She didn't go and tell the people, listen, you're all wrong, how dare you rebel against our holy leader. She didn't do that. When this group of people came to their home, she didn't argue with them and stand up for Hashem's honor. She did an Aveira, what was considered to be an Aveira. She took off her head covering and scared them away. Taking off her head covering in this society, in front of these people, was considered to be a breach in the sanctity of married life. And this turned out to be a tremendous benefit for Moshe Rabbeinu. Because now that Oyn ben Peles did not show up, people began to doubt, maybe indeed Moshe Rabbeinu is right. Oyn ben Peles is not here. So the only reason why people now are beginning to give Moshe a second chance is because a woman has breached the sanctity of marriage. Moshe is benefiting from this. So how did the enemy compensate? The enemy compensated by your Moshe's benefiting from a breach in tznius, so we'll compensate by accusing Moshe Rabbeinu to be a man that lives with married women. The reason why Moshe suffered from this outrageous accusation is because Moshe benefited from such something very similar. Now you'll ask me, but it's not fair. Moshe benefited from what? A woman didn't wear a head covering? Come on. How does that compare to an accusation in the newspapers that Moshe Rabbeinu is nichshol in Gilui Arayos? So let me tell you the story that he writes in his Sefer, the Tayr Libeinu. It just blew my mind. It's so simple, but it blew my mind for some reason. It blew my mind. Maiso shohoya kachoya. Story. Is the story true or not? I have no idea. But it's a good story anyway. Maiso kachoya. A rabbi gets up in shul and he delivers a drasha that was out of this world. Brilliant, brilliant inspiration to the people in the shul. And the purpose of the drasha was to inspire them to give money to a very worthy cause. And after the drasha was over, they conducted an appeal. And people called out pledges. $100, $1,000, $10,000, $20,000. Big pledges. And the rabbi was smiling from ear to ear. He's covered. The worthy cause is paid for 10 times over. It comes Mitzvah Shabbos, and the rabbi does a follow-up to collect the money. And he goes to one balabas who pledged $10,000, and he says, Rabbi, not this week, maybe another time. And he goes to the next person, and no one wants to give him one penny. Hi, what's going on here? In this morning, you were all so enthusiastic. You pledged. So he calls over one of the balabas and he says, what is going on? So he says, Rabbi, I have to tell you something. You made a speech today, blew our minds. You inspired us. We pledged with a full heart. But by Mincha, Shabbos Mincha, you weren't here. You were another shul giving another speech. Someone revealed to the Olam that you're a ganav. You stole a whole collection of Sifrei Torah. You're a ganav. You stole. You went into a shul. You stole. You took out of the Ur HaKodesh all of the Sifrei Torah. You stole them. You stole them. And you sold it and you pocketed the money. Such a person. It's one thing you're a ganav. To steal Sifrei Torah and pocket the money? We were so disappointed. We're not giving you money. So the rabbi is in shock. What did you say? You're saying that I stole all the Sifrei Torah and what? Absurd! Who told you this garbage? I can't say. You don't tell me, you said I'll break your head. I don't care, Lashon Hara. You don't tell me, I'll break your head open. He forced him to tell him who told him. He goes to that balabas, knocks on the door, and sits down and talks. I heard you said that I stole a whole bunch of Sifrei Torah. What? I never said you stole Sifrei Torah. I told the guy that you're a ganav. I told him that you stole Sforim. I never said you stole Sifrei Torah. I said you stole Shul Sforim. You went into the shul, they had a beautiful new Oiz V'Hodr Shas, $2,000. You stole it. You stole the Shul Sforim. I never told the guy you stole the Shul Sifrei Torah. I never said that. I said you were ganav, Yitaka. That's what I said about you.
Finally.
So the rabbi, what? Who told you I stole the shas, the leather-bound $2,000 shas from the shul? What kind of nonsense is that? This guy told it to me. Okay? The rabbi goes to that guy and he says to him, I heard you said that I stole Sepharim. I never said that. I did say you were ganav. I'm not going to deny that. I said that you stole one sefer. There was a sefer in the shul. You took home with you. You never brought it back. It's a ganav. He stole a sefer. What kind of baloney is that? I never stole a sefer. Who told you I stole a sefer? I'm an honest man. This guy told it to me. He goes to that guy. And he says to him, what did you say? I stole a sefer. He says, I never said you stole a sefer. He basically says, you know, Rabbi, you gave today such an amazing drasha. We were blown away by the brilliance, the creativity. inspiration. And you know, Rabbi, I got to tell you a secret. I'm a retired rabbi myself. And I know the business. And I couldn't believe, I'm jealous, basically. I was very jealous of what you did. So I told the Baal HaBas, the drosh is too good. It has to be. Just too good. The drosh is too good. So it has to be he stole the vart from a sefer. And I confess, I'm jealous of you. I was around my whole life. It's my career. I'm jealous. So I said it was such a good drosh. Has to be he stole it from a sefer. But I didn't say yakshu. So I said that being sarcastic. I said, whatever. So now I understand. So from going from a Baal HaBas who's jealous, who says that he could be he took the vart from a sefer, it went to he stole a sefer, to he stole sefarim, to he stole sifrei Torah. It goes from one thing to the other. Moshe Rabbeinu derived benefit from the wife of Oyn ben Peles. What did she do to help Moshe Rabbeinu? She did mamish a kleinikite sheba kleinikite. She opened the door, or now they peeked in the eye hole, whatever. She didn't have her head covered. Big deal. A kleinikite. I took the vart from the safe, and I forgot to tell you which safe I took it from. And that was a benefit for the support of Moshe Rabbeinu. And the people saw Moshe Rabbeinu, he derived benefit. So people began to say, you know, one thing leads to another. She took off her head covering. She did this, she did that, this and that. And before you turn around, okay, you can use your own imagination to fill in the dots that Moshe Rabbeinu definitely derived benefit from this act, which is not necessarily the best thing for his benefit. And that brought him benefit. And now, people use that, his enemies use that against him, not in the form of not wearing a head covering, but mamish saying about him the most illegitimate, because Moshe Rabbeinu is nichshal with an Eish HaSish. Okay, you got to trace the paper trail. The paper trail over here, where does it come? They should accuse Moshe Rabbeinu by saying he was nichshal with an Eish HaSish. How does it come from such a thing? It's unheard of. The answer is that Moshe Rabbeinu did derive benefit to his cause from the wife Oyn ben Peles. And unfortunately, there's a nature in this world from stories to spread and take on a life of its own, to exaggerate and takes on a life of its own that are so ridiculous and outrageous. But unfortunately, when you're dealing with people who are your enemies, that's the nature of the game. Okay, let's go to another idea. Let's discuss the accusation of Moshe Rabbeinu. The accusation of Moshe Rabbeinu here, they said to him some very stinging words. It's a short vart, a short yisoid, but it's very, very powerful. They said, Dasan v'avidim, Moshe Rabbeinu goes to Dasan v'avidim, tries to make peace. Vayishlach Moshe l'dasan v'lavidim b'nei Eliyah v'yomru, and they said to Moshe, loy nale, leave us. Moshe was moichel on his kovoid. Moshe himself went. He humbled himself to walk to the tents of Dasan va'avidam to talk to them, to make some type of have a conversation, to put this thing to an end. And Dasan va'avidam answered back with chutzpah. They said, Moshe, we're not opening up the door for you. Loi na'ale. And then they went weiter. They went, Hame'at, is it not enough? Ki helisanu mi'eret zovas chalav advash. They called Mitzrayim the land that Zovas Cholav Udvash. That was a terrible insult, because we learned last week we discussed who was the one that invented this term that Eretz Yisrael is the land of Dvash, the land that flows with milk and honey. Moshe. The Ovois never said the words Eretz Zovas Cholav Udvash. Never. Hashem never said, the first one to say these words was Moshe. And here Dasan va'avim are now throwing back at Moshe. Moshe, the goal is to take us to Eretz Yisrael, the land that you called Eretz Zovas Cholav Udvash in your own words. Guess what? Mitzrayim was the real Eretz Zovas Cholav Udvash. You have not brought us there. You have not brought Lahamisen Bamidbar. And you lord over us. Then they say something very bizarre. Even if you will poke out our eyes, if you will threaten us that if we do not come out of our tent and meet you at this meeting place, the penalty will be that we will be blinded, our eyes will be poked out, we would choose to go blind for the rest of our lives than to give in to you and come and have a conversation with you. Now this part is very bizarre. From all the different things that they can say to Moshe Rabbeinu, even if you're going to poke at our eyes, you can say, you'll chop off our arms. Even if you'll go and you'll torture us, you'll kill us, you'll burn us. I mean, you know, you want to be creative, you can go and you can say an infinite number of things. What is this nusach? This nusach. Even if you will blind us.
Not us, other people.
Ho'ainei, ho'anoshim, ho'heim. It means referring to themselves. They're referring to themselves. B'loshon saginar. Even if you will take away our vision, it's worth it. They said about themselves. They're referring to themselves. B'loshon saginar. Even if you will take away our vision, it's worth it. We would rather have that than to give you the dignity to speak to you in public. What is this all about? So I saw in the Sefer, in the same Sefer, the Tara Libeinu, he says an incredible Yisait. You know why it says eyes? What he was saying to Moshe Rabbeinu is, even if you'll bribe us, you'll give us money. Shoichad ye'aver einei pikchem. It says in the Torah, you Moshe, you gave us the Torah, Moshe Rabbeinu. What's it say in the Torah? Ve'hashoichad ye'aver einei pikchem. V'salef divrei tzadikim. The Torah describes a bribe as blinding someone's eyes. They were spitting back to Moshe Rabbeinu the words of the Torah that he gave them. In other words, Moshe, for all the money in the world, we're not going to come speak to you. In other words, that we can relate to. Okay, I don't think there's a kasha on that, right? If the Pasuk Torah would say that Moshe Rabbeinu, we're not coming to speak for all the money in the world, we're not going to come have a conversation with you. That's what it means. If you will give us money, by giving us money, giving us kavod, giving us a position, giving us benefit, then we're not going to be able to see things in the same light. Right? Because our eyes will be blinded, we're not going to come back. That's what it says in this Sefer. I want to go a step further. Let me go a step further. This statement is the ultimate, ultimate chutzpah that they could possibly have said to Moshe Rabbeinu. It's not just as saying to Moshe Rabbeinu, even if he'll give us all the money in the world. What they're saying to Moshe publicly is, Moshe, you give bribes. Moshe, you're a corrupt person. By making this statement, they're basically saying is, Moshe, you want us to come. So you want to do what you're accustomed to doing. How did you get your way all these years along? By slipping some people money under the table. So Moshe Rabbeinu, we know about you. You're a fraud. You're a politician. You give bribes. Oh, you want to bribe us also? No. We're not taking money. It's not just a chutzpah to say to Moshe Rabbeinu, we're not for sale. It's the connotation, the public statement, that Moshe Rabbeinu would even engage in such activity to give bribes. By saying this, they're indirectly putting Moshe Rabbeinu in a whole new light in the eyes of Klal Yisrael. Moshe Rabbeinu is no different than any politician. He just bribes his way into office. And we're not taking money. It's a whole new world. It's an accusation which is shocking. And now with this, you have a much greater appreciation of why everything that follows from here is all about Ketores. In the Beis HaMikdash, when you bring korbanos, there are many korbanos. Every single korban, the one who brings the korban gets something out of it. When you bring a korban chatos, you are forgiven from chet, a very severe sin of kares. When you bring a korban oila, you're forgiven from a bittul mitzvos asay. When you bring a korban shlamim, so I forgot the Gemara already. You also the shlamim also there's a benefit. You get what to eat, by the way. Okay, you get what to eat. So you have a benefit right then and there. You have what to eat. The bile eat the korban shlamim, and also provides kapara. I forgot exactly what the kapara, but it provides benefit to the owner as well. And Asha provides when the Gemara has an entire list of what every single korban, the benefit that it gives. There is only one offering in the entire Beis HaMikdash where the owner gets absolutely nothing from it. And that is Ketores. Why do we bring the Ketores in Yom HaKippurim? In the Kodesh HaKadoshim? Because the Ketores is an offering where the Torah gives the recipient zero in response. Nothing. There is no kapara, not for an asay, a lois asay, or any of the above. There's nothing to eat. You're not allowed to derive pleasure from the fragrance. You have to hold your nose, whatever that means. You have to try to, in your cover, not to derive benefit from the fragrance, to be moil behegdish. There is no benefit. It's pure lahashem. When Moshe Rabbeinu now responds to the people of Korach, you accuse me of giving bribes. You accuse me of doing this for my benefit, of corruption. What I do is 100% l'shem shamayim. And the only carbon that is 100% where there is no negiyos, there is no gifts, there is nothing, no benefit, the only thing is the Ketores, and that's why the test was the Ketores, and the pans that were used by the 250 men were permanently used on the Mizbeach as a permanent reminder that when you serve Hashem, you serve Hashem 100% L'Shem Shemayim. When you bring a carbon on the Mizbeach, your mind has to be 100% L'Shem Shemayim. Okay, last Vart. Last Vart. Dosan Vaviram. How come Dosan Vaviram, they survived until now, and this was their departure? Okay, Dosan Vaviram, whenever there is trouble in Klal Yisrael, who is the ringleader? Dosan Vaviram. Who was the one that didn't want to leave Egypt? Dosan Vaviram. And what happened to Hashem? Had Rachmanis upon them. He split the Yam a second time just for them. Who put the money out? Dosan Vaviram. They're the ones who tried to undermine Moshe with the money. Who it says in the pasuk by Shnei Anoshim Ivrim Nitzim. Who the two men they were fighting that said to Moshe, Halorgeni Atoimer Kasharakti Samitri? Dosan Vaviram. Dosan Vaviram were showing from day one. From day one. Yet they always survived. But here, they finally met their end. Why? If they were able to survive all the tzaras they gave Klal Yisrael until this point in time, they were not part of the 80% of the Jews who died in the Midbar, who died in Mitzrayim. They left Egypt and they survived all of the terrible things that they did, all of the tzaras they gave Moshe and Klal Yisrael, all of this time. So why now, all of a sudden, did they die? Why all of a sudden now, finally, did they meet their end when the earth swallowed them up? So in order to answer this question, we have to first understand why did they survive? In general, why did they survive? So we all know the famous Chazal, who, it says, the Noksim. Who were the taskmasters in Egypt? The Mitzrayim, the Nazis, Yimach Shemam V'Zichrom, did exactly the same things. The Kapos, they appointed Jews. They appointed Jews to be the managers. And because that way they put a buffer between themselves and their victims. And it was a technique that was very, very painful and harmful for Klal Yisrael. It's exactly what the Nazis did. They took it right out of the Egyptians. The Egyptians also appointed what are called the Noiksim. They were the middlemen. Who were the middlemen? Dasan Vaviram. In Egypt, they were the ones in charge of presenting the number of bricks. And what happened? When Paro told the Jews that no longer will I provide you with straw, you'll have to make the bricks yourself, they were unable to meet the quota. And what then, what happened? So who was the one that, who was in charge to make them do more? Dasan Vaviram. Dasan Vaviram saw that the Jews could not possibly produce one more brick. So they said, you know what? We'll let it go by. And when the Egyptians came and demanded the bricks, they allowed themselves to be beaten in the place of the Jews. Could you imagine that? Now, before we go further, very quickly, I have to contrast this with one other person. Korach. Where did Korach get all his money? This is a very disturbing medrash. Korach was the richest man in the world. You know where he got his money from? Yeah. Korach, when the Shibut started, Paro didn't force the Jews to build Pisa and Ramses. One day he said to the people, do me a toiva, could everyone please provide some bricks for this new project? Be a volunteer. Come out into the, be a volunteer to provide bricks. People came out and they made bricks. And the Egyptians, they recorded exactly how many bricks each person was able to produce to the gift voluntarily. Korach made on that day one brick. The average person, let's say, made 100 bricks. He made one brick. He was a young guy, and he played games. He says, why do you make only one brick? I spent the whole day beautifying it, sanding it. L'chvoy de melech Mitzrayim. Instead of giving you 50 bricks, I spent a whole day on one nice little brick, sand it, beautify it. It should be perfect, perfect, perfect. Okay, good, nice. That's taka, nice cover for the melech. And they wrote down one brick. And everyone that provided bricks, they wrote down how many bricks they provided. This was a technique, a trick, to see what they're capable of producing in a day. Later, when things got really bad, Paro took out the records and he says, okay, now it's not going to be any more volunteer. I'm being mishabed you. You're going to be my slaves. The number of bricks that you produced in honor of me, everyone now has to produce double. If you can produce 100 bricks leisurely, it means you can produce 200 bricks if you really want to. Korach, who only produced one brick, was only required to produce two bricks a day.
What?
He was a labor. He didn't have to work.
This is what it says in the Medrash. I hear your question, but it's a Medrash. I will show you the Medrash. I'll take a picture of you and email it to whoever wants to see this Medrash. He only produced two bricks. Now listen to this. This is shocking what it says now. Korach was a young man. He can produce 1,000 bricks if he wants. You know what he started doing? He took advantage. He produced a lot of bricks. And he sold them. The people who wanted a commodity, who people wanted to take a day off, he sold them. Then, when they started taking the children and putting them into the wall, if you did not produce enough bricks, they take your child and they put your child into the wall, so people couldn't produce. I need a brick. They went to Korach. He has bricks. He has extra bricks because he only has to produce two bricks and he has tons of bricks. Korach knew for their child, to save their child, they would give away all their money. And he took advantage. Isn't that ugly what he did? He took advantage.
How would he get support?
That's what he did. He did whatever he wanted to do. He took advantage and collected all of these bricks, all their money. He became a billionaire. All his money was earned through the tsar, the pain of Klal Yisrael. Blood money. Dasan va'aviron, in the same period of time, they were whipped in honor of Klal Yisrael. Isn't that amazing? Korach versus Dasan va'aviron. Korach was blood money. That's why they had. Let's not make any secrets. Why did they love Korach? Because he was so charismatic. It was because money. He was rich. Okay, money is the root of all evil. He was rich. Where did he get his money from? Blood money. Dasan va'aviron. They were not like, they were troublemakers. But you know something? Hashem liked them because they suffered the same time. Korach. What a shidduch here. What a shidduch. You have people who are wicked people who love machlekes, but the money they had was good money. Korach was a ganef. It wasn't, and now he's making machlekes also. It's a very disturbing shidduch. But they were both wiped out. Korach was wiped, but why Kaka then was Dasan v'Avim wiped out? So the answer is very simple. Dasan v'Avim were leaders in the time of the Tzaron Shel Yisrael. If there are anyone in the entire Klal Yisrael that can relate to Moshe Rabbeinu and understand what he goes through in life, it was Dasan v'Avim. Because they were there and they did it. They were the leaders in Klal Yisrael at a time when Klal Yisrael was suffering terribly. They could relate to Moshe Rabbeinu more than anyone else. And yet they go and they rebel against Moshe Rabbeinu. No excuse. They got away with everything because every aveira that they did was not a challenge to Moshe Rabbeinu's authority. It was just making trouble. But now when you're coming to challenge the leader and you have been in that position, you were the Noiksim. You were tortured. You suffered for your people. No more excuses. Now, you're not going to survive. Because for this ugliness, even though you, relative to Korach, are a tzaddik, relative to Korach, you're a tzaddik, but you've been in Moshe's shoes and know what it's like, now you're not going to survive this. This rishus is way over the top. And Korach, you think your blood money is going to gain you success in life. It's going to gain you nothing. No, it's not. No, Trump is not so pashut. You know why? Where does Trump have all his money from? His father. Where does his father have his money from? His father was not necessarily an anti-Semite, not muchruch. He invested a lot of money in real estate. Where did he get his seed money? His seed money to invest in real estate and become a billionaire and give it to his son. The Ku Klux Klan was giving $50 those days, which was a huge amount of money, to anyone who recruited a new member to the Ku Klux Klan. So Donald Trump's father saw this as a great business opportunity. He put on a white shmata, and he went out to recruit, not because he believed in the cause, because he got $50 for each new member. He collected an enormous amount of money. He invented that money in real estate and became very, very rich. So to me, I'm very torn. Because Donald Trump is only the Donald because of his money. And that money came from the Tata. And the Tata, he was a good man, it seems. It seems he was a very good man. He supported shuls. He was very good to Jews. But he took advantage of a very ugly situation. I'm telling you the facts, no? I'm making this up. Google it.